So welcome everyone to the fourth podcast in this Ezra virtual conference. We are here three people, Caroline Roberts, Annette Scherpenzel, and myself. So Caroline, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi everyone. Yes, I'm Caroline Roberts. I'm currently the president of Ezra, so you may have heard of my name. And I'm very happy to have this opportunity to be here today. Thank you.
I continue, I think. I'm Annette Scherpenzel. I'm the vice president of the Ezra committee at the moment. And like Caroline, I'm happy to be here today and tell a little bit about the past, present, and future of the Ezra.
And I'm Eldad Davidov. I was president of Ezra and now involved or just linked to Ezra. And I'm very happy about this opportunity to talk with you about this interesting topic of past, present, and future of server research. So let's start. How was server research before Ezra came into life?
There was a lot of excellent survey research and survey methodological research going on in Europe, but it was not coordinated and we weren't aware of what everyone was doing. And I think that's what Ezra has been really good at. It's been excellent at bringing people together and making people aware of what other things were going on. I guess, you know, hopefully it's helped to promote good, better standards in survey research. I remember when I worked with Roger Jowell on the European Social Survey, he talked about comparative surveys or cross-national surveys as herding cats, you know, the difficulty of trying to organize large numbers of people with very different sort of working cultures and traditions of conducting survey research using different methods and so on. It's not that easy to coordinate that kind of thing. And I totally saw that at the time when I was working on ESS. And I think Ezra's done an excellent job at kind of opening up survey methodology to a wider audience and to, you know, to perhaps help to raise standards more generally across European countries. So I think it's impossible to isolate the causal effect and say that it's Ezra that's done that, because there's been many other developments that have happened alongside it with the growth of big infrastructure projects in Europe and so on. But certainly I think the possibility to share research findings at Ezra conferences has helped to structure and improve survey research in Europe.
Annette?
Yes, I think if I remember that before the Ezra, it was there. Survey methodology was there and was quite strong also, but it was kind of dispersed in Europe. And so several groups working on that, people at the time at SUMAS, people at Amsterdam, people at Ljubljana, and they all worked on the same topics, but it was a little bit unconnected and dispersed. And I think the big benefit that Ezra has brought is that we are now more, united and know how to find each other, and that we really are a network and an association. And like I said in the beginning, at the time before the ESRA, we used to look very much at what American survey researchers were doing and their big conference, the APOR. And I still think that is also a really good thing, and they give a good role model for us, but it's also good to have a smaller European network here where people can find each other and exchange, because not everything is the same here as it is in the United States.
Do you think beyond opening up Ezra, did it achieve its goals?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we've done, like I said, there's been a lot of positive things that have come out of it, but certainly if I think over the last 2 years where I've been responsible for the association, there are things that we talked about trying to do at the beginning of the 2 years. And then of course, COVID happened and we got a little bit sidetracked and weren't able to do the things that we wanted to do. And I think, you know, there's always going to be more that you can do basically. And Ezra has got a way to go in achieving some of its original aims, but you know, each sort of term of office of the Ezra committee, we've managed to kind of make genuine progress towards the goals. And I think I look forward to continue collaborating in some ways with Ezra to try and help the association continue to move forward in that. I think, you know, one thing that we've discussed previously is this dialogue with substantive researchers and how that could be improved. I don't know if that's something you want to broach that topic now or bring it up later on in the discussion. I don't know, Annette, perhaps you have a thought on this.
If I look at this question, has Ezra reached his aims? It's a little bit broader than that, maybe. Has survey methodology reached its aims? And has Ezra reached his aims? I think, well, I keep hearing the voices of some former keynote speakers in my head when I think about this question. First of all, Mick Cooper, who once gave this speech about, has the sky fallen? And talking about this, the problems we have in survey research that sometimes are not really effective and not really reaching the goal, in the sense that non-response has been increasing over decades, how much effort and time and cost we put in it and how much new techniques and new methods we put in it, it's still not really, well, at least it's not increasing. The response is not increasing, even if non-response is maybe stable, it's not getting really better. So that is one question. Have we as survey researchers reached our goal? And then I also remember this keynote speech of Ineke Stoop 3 years ago, where she made this very beautiful overview of all sorts of findings and knowledge that we have in survey research, that we know. We know this work, that agree-disagree skills should be avoided, and we know we should do this and that. And it's not that often really followed. So survey researchers still do what they want, and I do not always follow these recommendations and findings that we actually know. So at the risk of being really pessimistic here, I don't think we have reached our goals or aims already. I think we should keep working on that. I think we have reached some things, but because I have to contradict myself a little bit, some things are clear. I mean, if you look at the presentation also in this conference about effects of probability samples and non-probability samples in online panels, and that it really affects, for example, the outcomes of models and the correlations between variables, I think then we, in that sense, then we are really successful in showing and what is better and also getting that implemented, because you see a big rise over the years in probability-based online panels, and I think even most funders and substantive researchers see our point that non-probability panels are not the way to go if you want to do really good survey research. So in that sense, we're also successful, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I count that as a success. But still, I think we have to work on getting our aims, both at ESRA and at survey methodologies in general. And maybe this is the moment to mention that there was this interview that I did with Willem Saris, the founder of the ESRA, a while ago. It's also on the ESRA website.
Yeah, I'm going to see it. I think many of the participants will have seen this.
Because yeah, that was also a little bit look at the past, present, future, like we do now. And I was very impressed by his last message at the end of this video that he gave us as ESRA committee and the survey researchers, that we also have to keep an eye and have to outreach to the substantive researchers, the ones that really need our survey research because they want to investigate a certain theme of topic, and that we have to make clear to them also why methodology matters and show them why it makes a difference for their results. And I think that aim we have not reached so well yet. And I think that's also an aim that ESRA should pursue in the future, to involve maybe also substantive research in the ESRA conference in some way. Or I don't know exactly how, but I think that is an important message that Willem Saris gave us, and I take it to heart. I think we should pick that up, that message. And that is the challenge we have for the future of ESRA.
Yeah, I also remember that for Willem Saris, this was really one of the main goals, and that's why ESRA, and when you organize a conference, we always made sure that there is a substantive session.
I think in that sense, ESRA has played a big role also, because, like I say, that is making our more visible as a group as a discipline, think of certain methodology, taken more seriously. And actually, I was thinking we could also make ourselves more visible right now in the corona crisis. I think as social scientists in general, because the corona crisis is for a large part about human behavior more than maybe about viruses, but also as survey methodologists, because what we see right now is there's sort of difficult groups that are not easy to reach, to get them to convince them to get vaccinated. And also it's the difficult groups that actually suffer the most from infections and then illness result of COVID. If you look really into those difficult groups that they're now trying to, you know, to reach out to get them to get vaccinated, it's the same difficult groups that we have seen for many years in survey research. You know, it's the people in the poor neighborhoods, it's people with a migration background, it's people with low education, it's the same difficult, and young people. So it's the same difficult groups that we have worked with so long and tried to get them to cooperate in our survey. So I think we can offer a little bit of our knowledge and experience there, maybe in how to reach out to these groups, and so that others can also profit and maybe value what we have learned over the years. I think at the same time, we also have to be open to what happens there now. They're putting a lot of effort also that maybe we can also learn from for the survey research future.
And when we think about this bridge between the excellent methodology and important substantive research, maybe one of several others, one of the good examples is the European Social Survey. Mm. And you, Caroline, you have been the chair of the methods advisory board of the European Social Survey, right? So what have been, in your view or in your experience, the main challenges working there with both methodologies and substantive people?
Well, it's funny because when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, well, I was in a workshop with the European Social Survey various stakeholders last week, and we were discussing the same challenges that we were discussing when I worked for the ESS back in, you know, the early 2000s. So we're still talking about whether and how to mix modes of data collection, and, you know, what impact might it have on the time series. And, you know, I mean, these are hugely important issues that should be discussed for 16 years or more. But yeah, so, you know, those are the challenges, and then they remain the same, but I think the story behind them may be evolving somewhat. So although we, you know, we're still talking about whether we should mix modes, it's not for the same reasons, or, you know, the challenges around non-response are different nowadays to what they were years ago, and, you know, the motivations for changing modes are different now. I mean, initially it was about accommodating different research traditions in Europe, and now it's, well, most recently, the need to adapt modes of data collection across multiple surveys has been a response to the pandemic, and this has really kind of moved along many of the kind of transitions that were already taking place, but, you know, it's had a knock-on effect, and a really interesting one that's kind of promoting innovation or encouraging innovation, I guess. I saw some really interesting presentations already at the conference so far on new interviewing methods, video interviewing, and the future of face-to-face interviewing is something that's come up a lot in these discussions with the European Social Survey. So although some of the topics are still, you know, I laugh because it feels like, you know, I'm still in a meeting with several players who were there at the time when I was working on the survey, and some of the topics are still the same. But at the same time, it's a whole different context. We're living in a completely different world now, and, you know, we have to confront the implications that has for survey data production. And it makes it a super interesting time to be involved as well, even though the challenges are great.
So is survey data now really better than maybe 20 years ago?
I think surveys like the European Social Survey has had an incredible impact on survey data quality in the comparative survey world, just as SHARE has as well. Definitely better than data that were previously available to researchers. But at the same time, you know, it's become so easy to produce survey data through web-based data collection that nowadays, you know, there's even more bad survey research alongside all the good survey research than there ever was in the past. So, yeah, it can be frustrating sometimes because you've been collaborating with other organizations designing questionnaires, and you kind of think, you know, you try and improve the design of questionnaires and it doesn't always get heard, and you kind of think, you know, will we ever make progress on this simple thing? Let Annette speak a little on this topic.
Yeah. Well, if I come back to this topic I mentioned before, if we look at non-response, then certainly it's not better than 20 years ago. But I think on other fields and other components of the total survey error, I think we have made progress. And I definitely think that we make better questionnaires and better panel designs. And I think indeed ESS has played a big role in that, in advancing the survey practice in Europe, but also some big national surveys like the, what is it called now in England, the Understanding Society panel, and I think also the German Economic Panel engages, and many others have contributed a lot to what we know now on survey research. So I think it has improved, except for knowledge pools. But I think it's also, yeah, we have to count our successes also, like I mentioned before. I mean, I think there's not a serious scientific researcher. Well, maybe there is, but not many serious scientific researchers who really believe they can do scientific, sound, good research in a non-probability-based online access panel. I think we were successful in convincing people that this has to be done in the right way, the proper sample. Yeah. And that's also a success. If you see some panels like that coming up everywhere and being founded and being successful.
Yeah. And what would be then the perfect survey from your perspective? Would it be the typical survey research with all the conditions that you would like to have, or would you see any perspectives of maybe combining it with other types of data? So what would be the perfect data for you?
Shall I?
Yeah, you go first.
I have a sort of dream image of the perfect survey. Yeah, indeed. Because a perfect survey for me would not just be a survey. I think the perfect survey, or maybe that's maybe the more the future starship of surveys in the future, is that you would have a small core of survey questions that is really the core that you need to ask, because there's no other way you can get that knowledge and that data. So about opinions and beliefs people have. And I think that should be only a short core, and that should be combined with different methods of data collection and different kind of data. So if you could combine that core set of survey questions, for example, with tracking data, with sensor data, so people were, for example, in sample activity trackers, or you have sort of sensors in their home, see how they move along or what they do. Or there's a lot of experiments going on also with scanning what people buy and eat, for example. And this kind of sensor data combined with a small core of questions on the one hand, and then on the other hand, also combined with administrative data that is in some countries also available and open. And that is from the new position I'm in now at Statistics Netherlands, combined with administrative data on people's background and income and education. So you don't have to ask all those questions, which makes it really long and burdensome for respondents. And I think that's one of the reasons why response is often so low, that it's just too much burden for them. So if you make it easy, you have this core set of questions about things you cannot measure in any different way, combine it with this sort of automatic measurements that you get from sensor data, and then combine it on the other hand with administrative data, or maybe even also with big data, with social media data. And the core to this whole dream image is, of course, linking, that you're able to link that on the individual level. But that would be my dream, that would be possible.
Caroline?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It seems to be the way to go. But I think I'd really like to put more emphasis on participatory kind of methods that really engage people in research more generally. I think we can do so much to try to improve people's data literacy, their understanding of what data are, where, you know, what good sort of reasons for sharing data and what are less good reasons for sharing data, and, you know, how are data used, why are they useful, why is it important to contribute and participate in social research. And I think we could be a bit more creative about how we go about doing that. I think, you know, apps present, you know, the perfect platform to combine these different data sources that Annette's mentioned some of. But, you know, to get people to participate in app-based research, they've got to have some kind of reason to want to do it. And I think we can do more there. We really could be more creative about how to get people involved. And perhaps the way to go is to, you know, collaborate with different different platforms that people are using for other purposes to gain information and so on, and then perhaps building survey and other social research designs around existing platforms that people are already engaged in. I don't know which direction this could go in, but I just think that we need to think a little bit outside the box, because I think we're already making huge progress from the point of view of thinking about how to combine different data sources. And this is especially in National Statistical Institutes, has been huge progress in terms of thinking about alternative ways of producing statistics. But I think in social research, there's still more we could do. There's in health research, they've kind of picked it up and run with it a bit more quickly. But maybe as social scientists, we could think about new ways of, well, I know that I've been involved in workshops with people who are working on exactly this kind of thing. So I don't want to, ignore the fact that there's a lot of really interesting research already going on, many studies of which have been presented at this year's ESRA conference. So thank you, everyone. But I still think that we could, just forge collaborations, data partnerships, and think more creatively about how to design social research for the future in a way that engages people better.
Yeah, and when we think about these activities, it can also involve some ethical challenges. For example, if we think about linking data sets, then there are many ethical issues involved. So how do you see this? Are these ethical issues, which maybe 20 years ago were less of an issue, but they are increasingly important today, going to become even more important or more of a challenge for survey research?
Can I first also give back the question you just asked us, Elmer, to you? What would be your perfect survey? That would interest me also.
Well, there's a lot of discussion about combining this also with big data. I don't know myself how this can be done in a theoretically driven way. I'm sure at some point we find a way, but I don't see it at the moment. But this can change anytime. For me, the perfect survey would be very few measurement errors with very well-defined questions, simple questions, because I think the simpler they are, the better people understand them and the better they can be translated, highly comparable across countries, and informative, touching upon really up-to-date questions. Sometimes we have really hot topics, but until a survey comes out, there are new hot topics. So also surveys that can react more quickly to hot debates in society. Mm-hmm. So
you wouldn't have anything to do if questions were so well formulated in surveys and translations worked.
It would be great that we can also do even more substantive research.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So going back to ethics, do you see any ethical challenges in all these developments in the future?
I think they're undeniable, really. I mean, it's hard to say that there aren't any. I mean, of course, there have been privacy concerns ever since people started asking personal questions in surveys. So I guess some of the issues are not new and they've just become more salient in recent years. But I think we have to take them extremely seriously, and not only from a legal point of view because of the requirements of GDPR legislation, but also just because it really appears to be the case that concerns around confidentiality and data privacy are driving people's decisions more and more to participate or not participate in surveys, or at least they're using that as an excuse, even if it isn't the real reason. So I think, we have to take it very seriously, and we have an opportunity now to kind of build exploit technology in a way that can actually improve respondents' experience of participating in surveys. But at the moment, so far, I get the impression that all we're doing is kind of freaking them out a little bit, because it seems like we want to kind of track them in every single domain of their life. But, there's so much we can do to pay attention to the details of how we do that, to exploit technology in a way that allows us to do it in an effective, secure way that protects people's data, and also to, as I said, to do more to improve people's understanding of the importance of sharing data for social research purposes and how people can contribute their data in a privacy protecting way. So yeah, of course there are ethical issues and I think we should do more to pay attention to them and be more creative again about how we resolve them or address these issues. I mean, Corona has been a good influence from that point of view because there's been a huge discussion around data privacy and the use of apps for collecting data. And so in a way, we should be grateful for this work that's gone on in the past year because we can probably learn a lot from it as we move forward in this area of data collection. Annette, what do you think?
Yes, I know, I agree. And the perfect survey dream that I just sketched, of course, has a big ethical thing to it. If you combine so many different data sources on an individual level, there's always the risk of privacy breaches or data protection issues. Yeah. I also am still always a little bit worried about the informed consent because what I see many times as methodologies is that people are asked consent, but I'm not convinced it's always informed consent. Mm-hmm. That is, there's so much text and information given that people do not, well, I don't really read that when I say agree. So I think a lot of times people don't know exactly what they consent to. And I think I know that the big data companies and the big IT parties do it all the time, but okay. We're not them. We have a kind of ethical principle as scientists that we should keep. So I think we have to be conscious about it, that we really have to be aware of what we tell people, what we ask them to consent to, and test if they really understand what we ask them to do and to consent to. And maybe again, we can give from our knowledge, once we do that, a little bit back to the other parties that do this kind of things. Maybe, who knows, maybe Facebook, Google can learn from us.
That would be good. Yes, so we have been mentioning several probably serious challenges, non-response, ethical issues, the combination with or linking with other types of data. So what do you think, is there a future for server research? Isn't it enough maybe we have other types of data like register data, other big data sources, wouldn't we do with these data sets or there is a future for server research?
Oh yeah, yes, I think so. We still need this core that I mentioned. I mean, there's not everything you can know from register data, from sensor data, from social media data. I mean, you need to, there's some things that only people can really tell you, you know, what they feel, what they think, what they experience. That's things you cannot get from any other data than from survey data, I think. So, I think there's a future for that. A better future, maybe even. I mean, a better future when we don't have to get all this other information that is maybe not so essential to what we really want to ask people. If we can get away with that and really keep it to the core of what we really need to know from people, what they really need to tell us, then I think that's would improve server research in the future. Caroline, what do you think?
Yeah, well, future? I mean, of course, otherwise, what am I going to do? No, I mean, I think we know there's enough. You know, big data is only useful to a certain extent. You need good quality probability-based sample surveys to kind of allow you to create some structure and sense from large-scale data sources. So I think, you know, that's, you know, from a theoretical point of view, it's understood that there's a role for surveys to play. I guess, yeah, I mean, then that's right, there's not much more to say on that. It's just the things that survey science does so well is just still valuable. Being able to represent a population of interest and being able to measure what people are thinking about instead of just what they're doing is invaluable. Of course, we can infer that from their online activity if we had access to those data, but we don't. And I think Actually, again, as I said, I was participating in this workshop with ESS, and we were talking a lot about, you know, whether we should think about, you know, using self-completion modes more in the future, or should we be building on the strengths of face-to-face interviewing. And yeah, I think that there is still a role to, you know, I think people can be more engaged in survey research. I think it's actually not an entirely unpleasant experience participating in surveys, or at least it doesn't need to be, right? If we do a good job as survey designers at designing good questionnaires, like you said, Eldad, with simple questions that people can easily understand and get engaged in. I'm very idealistic about surveys in many ways, because I do think that they, if they're done well, they can be a hugely positive you know, act of science, but also act of humanity in a way, because people can kind of really engage in the process of contributing to important societal research. So I, you know, I'm very idealistic in that respect, but I also know that unfortunately to do surveys really well, it takes a huge amount of effort and work, and you know that needs to be backed up with serious funding. And it's, you know, it's usually that that inhibits or impedes progress in designing surveys as well as we possibly can. So I guess there is a role for surveys, and we need to continue to work hard to promote survey research and especially to promote good practice in survey research.
Yeah, I must say that I was asked several times by colleagues, why do we really need to know what people think? What are their attitudes? I mean, it's much more important to know how they behave, what they do, so actual behavior. And for me also, just like you and Annette said, you two, that I cannot imagine good value research, good opinion research, good research on individuals without knowing more about what they think and what they plan to do, even if they didn't do it, because this is also a invaluable information about individuals, about how societies grow, and about what is important for people. So it's not only about what people do, it's also about what people are and what people think. That is important for us to know more about. And as long as we cannot connect a machine to the heads, which measures exactly what they think or want or wish, I think...
That sounds a little bit like these sensors that I was mentioning, but you know, with sensors and with other data and behavioral data, you can, let's take Corona as an example again, you can measure where people go and if they stay at home, if they comply with the rules or not and wearing a mask, and if you can also measure the infection rate and the hospitalizations. But you cannot measure in any way with administrative data, behavioral data or sensor data, how much fear people have or how lonely they are or what it means for their social environment. So that is things you really need to ask people. They have to tell us.
We are coming to the end of the survey, but maybe let's make a small game in which I list a few issues, and then maybe you could tell me shortly, if you could choose between these two options, what would be your favorite or what would you like to? So, survey data versus register data.
I cannot choose. I think you need both. I would combine them. Yeah.
Survey data.
Maybe survey. Yeah, if I have to choose, it would be survey data. Okay. And like I said, registers don't contain fear or loneliness. So yeah, survey.
Right. Next one, online versus face-to-face.
This is nice because, as I said, I've said it three times now, but we were just talking about this last week, and I ended up being a little bit the advocate for face-to-face interviewing. And in the past, I've always been kind of like, no, well, you know, interviewer effects, it's kind of messy. Let's just go with online self-completion. There's so much more you can do. But I started sort of convincing myself that, you know, what if we got it wrong? And maybe people would actually just, you know, actually enjoy talking to another human being more and more in the future, especially after this experience of, you know, virtual interaction. So I'm starting to think more and more on what could we do differently about face-to-face interviewing to improve it and to engage people back into sort of human interaction. But for the time being, I think probably online's the way to go from a quality point of view. But we shouldn't forget how interviewers can...
Annette?
It's also difficult for me, but I tend to online. You know, I've been with the online panels and with face-to-face panels, but I tend to choose online. But I'm also thinking of these examples we see in the SRF this year with the online video interviewing. So you have the best of both. You have an interviewer sort of interaction, but still you don't have to go to people's home anymore. It's online. Maybe go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next one, maybe relating also a little bit to the future, big data versus surveys.
Oh, surveys. question?
For social research than surveys, but it's true that, I mean, you know, in organizations that have a lot of big data at their disposal, then I guess both is the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about experience sampling versus surveys? People telling all the time what they are doing, what they think, what they feel, live.
Yeah, I like experience sampling too. I can't really choose because it's not opposite, right? It's supplements, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the way my brain works, I'm not very good with these choices because I'm always seeing the benefits of both option. I think, you know, well, it's sort of cheesy and old-fashioned in a way, but it's kind of like, you know, we need to use the best tools for the job at hand. And sometimes we're not very good at that because we're wedded to a particular approach. And what part of our role, I guess, in ESRA and communicating better with researchers from other disciplines is exactly that, perhaps emphasizing the importance of choosing the most appropriate methods for the most for the research question or for the particular target population, and thinking about how we can tailor the design of surveys to facilitate as far as possible and engage as far as possible different subpopulations of interest. Like Annette said, you know, there are groups that some researchers are especially interested in who are habitually missed by traditional survey design. So, you know, what can we do differently to engage these people? And I think, yeah, we can do one thing we can do differently. And Annette and I have talked about this once before in a restaurant over dinner. We had a very fascinating conversation about how we should be doing more kind of adaptive survey design. And that's a kind of an extension of the same point. It's this need to choose the right methods for the right,
goal.
I don't even know how to finish my sentence, for the right methods for the right job.
Yeah, methods for different groups, but also really new methods for different groups, not more of the same. What would you choose, Eldar?
Yeah,
the right tool for the right... population, and also for the right research questions. Surveys are perfect. Other research questions, surveys are limited. And then we can look aside into other tools. So I think really tools are complementary. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the future, trying to combine these together. Yeah, so I think taking into what you both said and what I think that's where we are going to, looking at ways to combine different methods, different tools.
And I think, I know you want to finish, but I just want to emphasize what I really believe that ESRA has a role to play, or that survey methodologists have a really important role to play in training people in effective social research design and trying to find the best way of, best way of combining methods to produce the best outcome for particular research questions. So I think this kind of builds on what we've already been talking about.
Yeah. So with this message, thank you so much, Caroline, Annette and Caroline, for all your insights, experience, ideas, views. And we are at the end of the interview, and we're also at the end of the conference. And Caroline, you are the as the president and the organizing and active together with Annette, the conference organization, which was now virtual. Maybe we'd like to say some final words.
Thanks, Eldad. Yes, absolutely. It's very important that I say thank you to various people without whom this conference couldn't have happened. So most of all to Vera Tupol for all she did to pick up the organisation of this conference at rather short notice, for putting together an excellent scientific programme with lots and lots of fun things added on, which, you know, I've got so much admiration for her amazing welcome wrap and for so slickly organising the structure format and content of all the days of Ezra that have taken place this year. She couldn't have done it without the support of Vera Lomazzi, Marika Hahn, Bartjan Boverhoff. I know they've all been very actively involved in supporting her in setting up the programme and making everything happen. There are other people who are quite important in the organisation of the conference. We have Tinyan, who's been involved in getting sponsorship, and I'd like to thank all the sponsors who've supported Ezra with the past couple of years, but especially at this conference. Salima Duhu and especially Stephanie Steinmetz, who was very busy in the last few weeks putting together the awards and organising the judgment of all the different awards. And I have to thank all the other members of the Ezra committee, who it's been such a pleasure working with everyone over the last couple of years. And they have been playing a very important role in making Ezra continue to function over the last couple of years, despite the challenges we've been up against. And especially John Early, who is our web developer at the University of Southampton, who's responsible for the design and function of our conference management system. It's been a great pleasure to work with him. He's done a fantastic job, as always, in supporting Ezra and the organisation of this conference. Thank you to all the contributors to the conference. It's been a real pleasure learning about your work, and I really appreciate you all supporting Ezra during this non-live real event this year, during this virtual conference. And I'm really excited, looking forward to catching up with everyone and seeing you all again in 2023. So hopefully we will meet each other in person at that point, and I'm already looking forward to it. Thank you very much. Have a great summer.